This episode of the OrthoBullets podcast will go over the topic of lower extremity spine and neuro exam from the spine section on orthobullets.com. Let's start this episode with a quick overview of the lower extremity spine and neuro exam with respect to the nerve root and their corresponding role in primary motion, the primary muscles that they innervate, sensory contributions, and reflex contributions. Keep in mind, however, that the following is a simplification as muscles are often innervated by multiple nerve roots. For example, ankle dorsiflexion usually has a contribution from both L4 and L5. Starting with L1, this nerve root is responsible for iliac crest and groin sensory function. It's also responsible for the cremasteric reflex, which receives contributions from both L1 and L2. Moving on to L2, the primary motion that L2 is responsible for is hip flexion and adduction. The primary muscles that it innervates includes the iliopsoas, which receives contributions from the lumbar plexus and femoral nerve, and L2 also innervates the hip adductors, specifically the obturator nerve. The sensory involvement of L2 is the anterior and inner thigh. The reflex involvement is the cremasteric reflex, as we mentioned, receives contributions from L1 and L2. Moving on to L3, the primary motion L3 is involved in is knee extension. However, keep in mind that L4 is also involved in knee extension. The primary muscles that L3 innervates are the quadriceps, which is specifically innervated by the femoral nerve. Sensory contributions of L3 include the anterior thigh, medial thigh, and medial knee. Moving on to L4, the primary motion that L4 is responsible for is ankle dorsiflexion. However, keep in mind that L5 also contributes to ankle dorsiflexion. The primary muscles that L4 innervates is the tibialis anterior. Specifically, this is innervated by the deep peroneal nerve. Sensory contributions of L4 include the lateral thigh, anterior knee, and medial leg. The reflex that L4 contributes to is the patellar reflex. Moving on to L5, the primary motion that L5 contributes to is foot inversion, toe dorsiflexion, hip extension, and hip abduction. The primary muscles that L5 innervates includes the tibialis posterior. Specifically, this is innervated by the tibial nerve, the EHL and the EDL, which are specifically innervated by the deep peroneal nerve. L5 also innervates the hamstrings, which is specifically innervated by the tibial nerve, and the gluteus maximus, which is innervated by the inferior gluteal nerve. Finally, L5 also innervates the gluteus medius, which is specifically innervated by the superior gluteal nerve. Sensory contributions of L5 include the lateral leg and the dorsal foot. Moving on to S1, the primary motion that S1 contributes to is foot plantar flexion and foot eversion. The primary muscles that S1 innervates is the gastroc soleus complex, which is specifically innervated by the tibial nerve, and the peroneal muscles, which are specifically innervated by the superficial peroneal nerve. The sensory contributions of S1 is the posterior leg, and the reflex that S1 contributes to is the Achilles reflex. Moving on to S2, the primary motion that S2 is responsible for is toe plantar flexion, and the primary muscles that S2 innervates include the FHL and the FDL, which are specifically innervated by the tibial nerve. The sensory contributions of S2 is the plantar foot. Finally, moving on to S3 and S4, the primary motion that these nerve roots are responsible for is bowel and bladder function. The primary muscles that they innervate include the bladder, and the sensory contributions of S3 and S4 include perianal sensation. Now let's go over some characteristic history and symptoms and their possible corresponding etiologies. So starting with systemic symptoms like weight loss, this may signify tumor or infection. Evaluation of localized axial pain can also be secondary to tumor or infection. Mechanical pain may stem from instability or discogenic pain. Radicular pain could be secondary to a herniated nucleus pulposus. Night pain can be secondary to tumor. Referred pain can be secondary to peptic ulcer disease, cholecystitis, nephrolithiasis, pelvic inflammatory disease, or pancreatitis. Concomitant pain can be from the hip or the shoulder, and psychogenic pain can be due to secondary gain issues. As far as inspection, be sure to look at the skin, looking for prior scars, cafe au lait spots, and hairy patches in the lower lumbar spine. Now let's talk about the motor exam. Specifically, we'll go over the muscle grading system according to the Asia scale. So 0 corresponds to total paralysis, 1 corresponds to palpable or visible contraction, 2 corresponds to active movement, full range of motion, with gravity eliminated, 3 corresponds to active movement, full range of motion, against gravity, 4 corresponds to active movement, full range of motion, against gravity, and provides some resistance, 5 corresponds to active movement, full range of motion, against gravity, and provides normal resistance. A grade of NT or not tested corresponds to a patient being unable to reliably exert effort or the muscle is unavailable for testing due to factors such as immobilization, pain on effort, or contracture. Moving on to the sensory exam, according to the Asia Sensory Grading System, 0 corresponds to absent, 1 corresponds to impaired, 2 corresponds to normal, and NT corresponds to not testable. Now let's go over some specific tests. So some special tests to know include the straight leg raise, cross straight leg raise, Babinski test, ankle clonus test, and bulbocavernosus reflex. So starting with the straight leg raise, this can test for compression of the lower lumbar nerve roots, specifically L4 to S1. Keep in mind that this is important to distinguish from hamstring tightness, and the straight leg raise is considered positive if the symptoms are produced with the leg raise to 40 degrees. As far as a cross straight leg raise, this is characterized by performing a straight leg raise in the uninvolved leg, which produces symptoms in the involved leg. Moving on to the Babinski's test, positive findings suggest an upper motor neuron lesion. An ankle clonus test is also associated with an upper motor neuron lesion. The bulbocavernosus reflex tests for the presence of spinal shock, and a positive reflex is with anal sphincter contraction with squeezing of the gland's penis or clitoris. You can alternatively tug on a Foley catheter to stimulate the reflex. Now, let's go over some clinical findings with respect to symptoms, neurologic etiology, and causes. So starting with symptoms of paresthesias alone on the medial aspect of the knee, the neurologic etiology can be irritation of the saphenous division of the femoral nerve. Causes can include a psoas abscess and saphenous nerve compression secondary to surfing. Symptoms of a Trendelenburg gait can have the neurologic etiology of injury to the L5 nerve root. Causes can include a paracentral L4-L5 herniated nucleus pulposus. Symptoms of numbness along the lateral thigh can be from the neurologic etiology of myralgia paresthetica, which is lateral femoral cutaneous nerve palsy. Causes include compression of the lateral femoral cutaneous nerve from patient positioning. Symptoms of foot drop can have the neurologic etiology of common peroneal nerve palsy or sciatic nerve compression. Causes include lateral knee compression and hip dislocation. Finally, quadriceps weakness can have the neurologic etiology of femoral nerve palsy. Causes can include a hyperflex pavlik harness, as well as L3 and L4 nerve root compression. Now, let's end this review session talking about the Waddell signs. So Waddell identified 5 exam findings that correlated with non-organic low back pain. The tests include 1, tenderness, 2, simulation, 3, distraction, 4, regional, and 5, overreaction. So the finding of tenderness can be described as A, superficial, or B, deep. Superficial is characterized as pain with light touch to skin, while deep pain is characterized by non-anatomic widespread deep pain. 2, simulation can be further described as A, pain with light axial compression on the skull, and B, pain with light twisting of the pelvis. 3, distraction is described as no pain with distracted straight leg raise. Moving on to regional, this can be described as A, non-anatomic or inconsistent motor findings during the entire exam, and B, non-anatomic or inconsistent sensory findings during the entire exam. Finally, 5, overreaction can be noted at any time during the exam. Okay, so now that we've gone over the major points about this topic, let's go over a few questions to apply the information and get a sense of how this topic might be tested. First question. A Trendelenburg gait would most likely be caused by which of the following lumbar conditions? And the choices are 1, L3, L4 far lateral disc herniation, 2, L3, L4 central disc herniation with impingement on the bilateral descending nerve roots, 3, L4, L5 far lateral disc herniation, 4, L5, S1 far lateral disc herniation, and 5, L5, S1 paracentral disc herniation. The correct answer to this question is 4, L5, S1, far lateral disc herniation. So a Trendelenburg gait is caused by gluteus medius weakness. Gluteus medius is innervated by L5. Therefore, an L5, S1 far lateral disc herniation could cause this condition. To quickly go over the incorrect answers, answer 1, L3, L4 far lateral disc herniation is incorrect, as an L3, L4 far lateral disc herniation would cause an L3 radiculopathy and cause hip flexion weakness. Answer 2, L3, L4 central disc herniation with impingement on the bilateral descending nerve roots is incorrect, as an L3, L4 central disc herniation would cause an L4 radiculopathy, leading to knee extension and ankle dorsiflexion weakness. Answer 3, L4, L5 far lateral disc herniation is incorrect, as an L4, L5 far lateral disc herniation would cause an L4 radiculopathy, leading to knee extension and ankle dorsiflexion weakness. Finally, answer 5, L5, S1 paracentral disc herniation is incorrect, as an L5, S1 paracentral disc herniation would lead to an S1 radiculopathy and would most likely cause ankle plantar flexion weakness. To quickly review, the gluteus medius originates from the dorsal ilium inferior to the iliac crest and inserts to the lateral and superior surfaces of the greater trochanter. It is the major abductor of the thigh and also functions to help to rotate the hip medially and laterally. The arterial supply is by the superior gluteal artery. It is mediated by the superior gluteal nerve, which is primarily innervated by L5. L5 also contributes to ankle dorsiflexion combined with L4, great toe extension, and sensory over the lateral calf and dorsal foot. Suri et al. Calculated the likelihood ratios for the ability of physical exam individual tests to predict the presence or absence of nerve root impingement. They found a likelihood ratio of greater than 5.0 indicates moderate to large changes from pre-test probability of nerve root impingement to post-test probability. They found the likelihood ratio of hip abductor weakness being associated with an L5 radiculopathy was 11. Moving on to the final question. During a supine examination, passive elevation of the lower extremity between 30 to 70 degrees causes radiating pain from the patient's lower back to distal to the knee. This physical examination maneuver is known as, and the choices are 1, Lhermitte sign, 2, Hoffman's test, 3, straight leg raise test, 4, Sperling's test, and 5, femoral nerve stretch test. The correct answer to this question is 3, straight leg raise test. So a positive straight leg raise test is when pain is generated from a patient's back to past the knee upon elevation of the affected extremity while supine. Specifically, passively elevating a patient's affected extremity from 30 to 70 degrees places tension on the L5 S1 nerve root, exacerbating pain and indicating radiculopathy. Tawa et al. Performed a systemic review summarizing the results of 12 studies testing the accuracy of diagnostic neurologic physical examination maneuvers. While overall inter-observer agreement for motor examinations exhibited poor to moderate agreement, sensitivity and specificity for straight leg raise was 0.84 and 0.78, respectively. To quickly go over the incorrect answers, answer 1, Lhermitte sign is incorrect, as Lhermitte sign is positive when cervical flexion or extension leads to shock-like sensation radiating down the spinal axis and into the arms and or legs. A positive test is specific but not sensitive for cervical spinal cord compression and myelopathy. Answer 2, Hoffman's test is incorrect, as Hoffman's test is performed in one of two ways. Hold and secure the middle phalanx of the long finger and then flick the distal phalanx into an extended position, where involuntary contraction of the thumb IP joint is a positive test. Or hold and secure the distal phalanx of the long finger and then flick the distal phalanx into an extended position, and involuntary contraction of the thumb IP joint is a positive test. Keep in mind that a positive test is sensitive but not specific for cervical myelopathy. Answer 4, Sperling's test is incorrect, as Sperling's test is performed by rotating the head towards the affected side, extending the neck, and then applying an axial load, that is, applying downward pressure on the head. The test is considered positive if pain radiates into the ipsilateral arm when the test is performed for 30 seconds. This foraminal compression test is specific but not sensitive in diagnosing acute radiculopathy in the cervical spine. Finally, answer 5, femoral nerve stretch test is incorrect, as a femoral nerve stretch test is performed with the patient in the prone position and the knee is passively flexed to the thigh and the hip is passively extended. The test is positive if the patient experiences anterior thigh pain. This test is usually strongly positive in patients with protrusions at L2, L3, and L3, L4, slightly positive or negative in L4, L5 disc protrusions, and negative in cases with a lumbosacral protrusion. That's all for this review about lower extremity spine and neuro exam. Hopefully that was helpful. This is the OrthoBullets podcast, a daily audio review session by OrthoBullets, the free learning and collaboration community for orthopedic surgery education. Keep in mind that these podcasts are designed to go along with the topics on orthobullets.com, and in fact, you can listen to these episodes right on the OrthoBullets website or mobile app while going through the topic. If you've gotten any value from the OrthoBullets podcast so far, please consider leaving us a 5-star rating and writing us a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. It will help us spread the word and increase our discoverability tremendously. Also, if you aren't already, be sure to follow OrthoBullets on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, and YouTube for daily high-yield content. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you all tomorrow right here on the OrthoBullets podcast.